Did we do it? Which way round did we do it last time?
I did the platoon bit because I had to do it like 3 times.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah. You introduce Nathan, then I'll do the little platoon bit.
Okay, that sounds good. All good?
Yeah, I feel like I should come up with some kind of fake advert.
Squarespace. Actually, quite a useful advert website.
They're not paying us though.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Right, true intro. Right.
Yes, you do.
Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with myself, Aidan Roberts, and my co-host, Sam Pryor.
Hello.
Today, we were interviewing Nathan Phillips. He's one of Britain's most successful competition boulderers, has been leading the way for the bouldering team for many years, ever since doing youth comps. He mentions one of his competition highlights was actually towards the end of his youth competing career. We run through his competition career highlights, and the obvious reason to talk to him at this moment is he actually recently made the decision to retire from competitions and focus entirely on his rock climbing. So we discuss a lot about the motivations behind that and his aspirations for the rocks. We both know Nathan quite well and have been on various trips with him. So there are various throwbacks to trips in the past, but it's a good conversation and I hope you enjoy it.
And that means leaves me with our little Patreon spiel. Just to say, we don't have adverts on the podcast for as long as possible. And what helps us to do that is the fact we do have a Patreon page, and those lovely people support us a little bit to enable us to keep this ad-free for as long as we can. The intention is to keep it ad-free forever, but you know, people can be wooed for certain numbers.
We need some young longevity in this gig.
Yeah. So at some point we might be offered an advert that makes us cast aside all our morals. But up until that point, we have a lovely Patreon page. If you enjoy the podcast and want to support us to help us keep it going, then please do check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. Getting access to a Discord channel, which we have a chat in, and you get to know the guests coming up and suggest questions and this, that, and the other, and join our community. So yeah, if you're enjoying the podcast and want to support it, please do check it out.
Thanks for listening.
I kind of wanted to get a little chat going about something that is not really related to Nathan as much as Aidan. Nath, did you see the video that...
I didn't expect this.
I asked you about it. I said, Nath, did you see the video that Tristan Chen put out on YouTube?
No. To be honest, I don't watch that much stuff on YouTube, so I don't know.
Well, it's very interesting, but it does relate...
Some cracking comments. I actually haven't really watched the video all the way through. I know the video from people showing me the comments.
It's funny. It's titled like Why Climbing Needs a Villain, and I think the implication is that Tristan wants to sort of put himself into that role, and he comes out with some pretty controversial stuff, and I kind of wanted to run a little bit past you guys, in particular Aidan, because in a sense he's kind of calling Aidan out, I guess, because he uses the line. Alphain will stay 9A unless we say otherwise. And he said, I think his direct quote is, it's clear that it's not. Four people did it so quickly. But like, he then goes on to vent some frustration that why is it that we don't allow people who've not seen or tried a boulder to comment on its grade?
Does that not make loads of sense? Why they don't have an informed decision on the climb?
I know. It is strange to me that, like, it doesn't seem like a radical opinion that if you've not tried or even touched the holds of a climb, you possibly shouldn't have too strong of an opinion on how hard it is. But that's one of his gripes.
Yeah. I did actually, yeah, he did say something. He says it all in a very like monotone fashion, doesn't he? So it's hard to tell if he's joking. I think he is joking.
No, but, he's not, I don't think he is joking.
Oh, you think he's serious?
I think he's serious, yeah.
that's kind
I
of
mean, there are jokes in it, but yeah. But I don't think... I think the core statements that he's making, he actually kind of believes.
That's a weird idea. I don't think I'd ever personally have much to say on a... I think even boulders I've tried but not done. But like, obviously if you like fluff out at the top out of something, which you really should have done, I feel like it's hard to even gauge how hard something is before you've done it, because there's so many parts to like a boulder is so much more complex than the individual moves, like to do a boulder. So for I'm just trying to think, you could do like definitely like do all the moves on a boulder and not really know how hard it is at all. Like say if you like, yeah, I don't feel like it's hard to even gauge that before you've done it, let alone before you've even been there and felt the hold and tried it. I guess it's like, this is like kind of now like articulating an opinion through kind of just media, right? I assume that's what it means. Yeah. It's like four people have done it and therefore it must be easy.
Yeah.
Not easy. Or it must be easier than...
Easier than 9A, yeah.
Yeah.
I think...
I don't know if he knows. I've never climbed with him. I don't think he's climbed with like Will or... Maybe he's climbed with Simon, I don't know. I don't know if he's climbed with Sean.
Probably not, seeing as he called him Nico Perlison in his video, so...
Yeah. Wow, that's strange. Yeah. It's weird to like have never even climbed with the people who's calling out or tried to climb.
I think it's a really interesting point that he doesn't make, which is like, there's a kind of assumption that Burden of Dreams is really, really hard or harder. But like, if Burden of Dreams...
Which I'd probably agree with.
If Burden of Dreams was in Chironico, it probably would have seen another ascent by now. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Can't comment on that.
But I mean,
I guess you get reliable conditions, yeah.
Yeah, it would have more reliable conditions.
That would probably be the biggest factor, I reckon.
But anything that's in a really like geographically easily accessible place is going to see more ascents, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so much easier to try it.
I think it probably likely would, yeah. Yeah. Well, we can always like, I don't know, helicopter it over. It's probably like eco or something. Pick up the boulder. I mean, they've done that in London. Just move some boulders from the coast, plonk them in some parks. Burden of Dreams now in Hampstead Heath.
I love that. That'd be great. We got to tell Nathan about there's a sensational comment on this.
Oh, one. Yes. do you want me to read it out?
I think I remember it, but you have to correct me if I'm wrong, Aidan. But like, on the post about the Why Climbing Needs a Villain, someone wrote, "I hate wedge climbing. All we want is to see strong Aidan Roberts, and all we get is weak midget Jim Pope."
The funniest thing I find about that comment. The funniest thing I find about that comment is that wedge climbing and UK climbing was not referenced in the video whatsoever. It was not in a response to anything to do with the video. Somebody just came up with that.
Someone just wants to get on board and get on the bashing wagon.
Yeah, just trying to jump in, yeah, into the villain shoes.
But yeah, it's been a surprising amount of salt on climbing social media since last time we chatted, because there was also the Matt Climber post. Did you see that?
Well, I saw that when I looked at this climbing villain one, because... Didn't he do another video talking about that? I don't know. I didn't know this Matt Climber guy. He essentially just called out Andre, didn't he? Went on a big rant
like
about
savagely called out Andre, which was like a bit of a surprise.
Is this the South African guy?
Yeah, the South African guy.
Yeah, I've seen his antics on Instagram.
Did you see the post?
Very aggressive.
No, I just seen him pops up occasionally of him doing like some spinning around and jumping off banisters and stuff to climb the monster. That's all I've seen of him. I don't know.
He's gone beyond. I've seen videos of him like setting up hula hoops and like jumping through it.
Oh wow.
Wait, is he a climber?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. but it's a bit creepy because like he tends to wear like hot pants and no other clothes and like a monkey mask, which is a bit like, I mean, it's like in a way he's like kind of trying to appeal to children, but then also only wearing hot pants, which is like a slightly concerning combination.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds like a character. Anyway, climbing media.
Let's move on.
Sorry, Nick.
Climbing media.
Yeah.
Hey, Nathan.
Yes.
It's great timing to have you on because you've called time on your career. Your comp
climbing career. Yeah.
I'm climbing. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm going to go play some squash now.
Back to bikes.
Where did that come from, Nath?
Well, I mean, you know already, it's been like a long decision I've been trying to like hem over in my mind, and it's been like over a year kind of coming, this thing. We talked about it a lot when we were in Rocklands, just like every time I went on a rock trip, I would just be like, I just want to do more of this, and I don't want to go back to training for comps. And it just kind of slowly built and built. And then I would do a comp again and be like, no, this is really fun. I like it. And then I go to another rock trip and be like, this is what I want to do. But it was just every time I went back and forth, I would like the other thing again. But it's just, I think not every single comp was like that. Some of them were. And then every rock trip was like that. I was like, this is what I want to do. Pretty much every time. And it just finally just came to it. I was had a coaching session with my coach, Dave Mason, and was basically like trying to plan my training till the selection event, which is in February. And basically I had to make a decision if I wanted to do it or not. Or go rock climbing. And then I just decided then and there, decided I wanted to go rock climbing in February instead. And Aiden was actually there then. He was the first person I told after Dave.
It was an honor to be there. I did indeed shake your hand and do it again. it was an honor to witness. But that kind of same thing resonated quite a lot with me because I felt like I had a really similar thing, like a really similar experience or similar relationship with comps and rock trips. And I think the start of that realization for me was actually when I went to Rocklands in 2018 with you, Nathan. That was on the back of like a bit of like a, not a disappointing season. It had gone okay, but not as well as it felt I could. And like I'd enjoyed some competitions, but it's obviously I'd found them stressful at times as well. And then I think we had like five, I think it was maybe even over 5 weeks in Rockland.
Yeah, it was about that, yeah.
And I sounds like you had similar experiences on trips, but like every day I was out, I was like, well, this is flipping amazing, with the exception of trying a, what's that boulder called? Solar Power.
Solar Power.
yeah, that was
too
compy.
I tell everyone about that.
that was too compy. What? It was a knee bar palm down or whatever. I couldn't touch it.
I think you've already talked about that on a previous episode. So.
Oh, yeah.
I won't
The very first one, I think we both briefly mentioned it. It's always worth giving a shout out that if you are going to Rocklands and you fancy burning off Aidan Roberts,
get on solar power.
Seek out, I think, 7C called solar panel power. I called it solar panel last time as well.
Yeah, it was desperate. Oh, yeah, we had the summer debrief when you just got back from Rocklands, Sam.
Yeah.
From a trip with Nath, yeah. Four years later. Wow, that's
Funny. Been on a Rocklands trip with both of you separately.
Yeah, independently, 4 years apart.
Is it that long?
Yeah, 2018. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. I was actually going to ask that. There's a good little timestamps there. You said you'd kind of had this feeling of whenever you switch between rock trips and comp trips, you enjoy bits of both of them. And maybe there was slightly less consistency in how much you enjoyed competitions. But was there anything that particularly changed that tipped that balance? So you'd just be like, actually, no more comps.
Why now?
I think the actual decision point came because I had to decide for my training, if I wanted to train for this selection event, and then if it went well, then I'd be selected and go to some comps, or still train for anyway, and then possibly not get selected and then figure out rock. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go, February is a good time to go rock climbing, especially in Switzerland. It's one of the driest months, I think. I mate Sam Blackwell is going out around that time. He mentioned it to me because we went out together in November. If I train for this selection thing and do the selection event, then I basically can't go on a rock trip in February. Which means then I have to wait, go on a trip that's too warm to do anything that I want to do, or wait till the summer and go southern hemisphere. It was basically screw it, I'm over it, I want to go rock climbing.
Training you'd have to do for comps diverge a lot from that of the training you'd do for rock climbing. The comp season bullies out any climbing trips for the majority of the year, really.
Yeah, me personally, I've definitely been on more rock trips than most other comp climbers, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
I try to fit, I basically haven't been on a spring trip in 10 years because that's just that's the main training block for the comp season. So I basically haven't been rock climbing in that period. But I've managed to fit in a few long trips in the summer in between the World Cups. And then usually get one in towards the end of the year, November time.
And arguably in Europe, it's often those spring months which have the best conditions, seemingly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's always really hard, when you're grafting away in the gym, lifting weights and stuff, and you're just seeing all this stuff on socials of people out on the rock. Doing some cool stuff, and you just just lift some more weights, do some more boulders, practice some paddle jumps, wait for the comp season to come around.
Complain about your horrendously thin skin from paddling around on fiberglass volumes.
Yeah, you know, it's I really didn't like working on coordination stuff. It's really fun when you do it. And if you go up to one and you do it in a couple of tries, it's great. But actually trying to learn it, to do it, is a really hard one. It's pretty boring. You basically learn a tiny little thing about it each time, each attempt. And it's just you're basically just hooking yourself this thing where you lose loads of skin. You just it can take, you might have 2 hours on one boulder to do this hard coordination thing. And then if you do it once, you then go in the next day and you're going to be back to square one again. So you've got to do it 10 times to to be able to remember what you're doing and stuff. So it's pretty boring, and I didn't enjoy that part of it at all, actually.
Incredibly time-consuming as well.
Funny thing, actually, that one of our first sessions, I went to the hangar in Sheffield, and the first sessions after the decision, I was just climbing some boulders, and then I was like, I don't need to try and flush these boulders. I can literally just go and ask Tara, who set the boulders, but how do you do this boulder? Because it doesn't matter. That was a really weird thing for me. So I've always had to like try and like figure out the boulder myself, because that's what I'm going to have to do in a comp. So yeah, it's quite nice to just not have to do that. I can just ask for some beer.
Yeah, you can just enjoy it.
And I guess like, well, it kind of ties into it. Like, whenever I've competed with you or seen you compete, it seems like your like superpower is almost how well rounded you are. Or
I'd agree with that.
I don't
have one specific thing that I'm like amazing at. There might be a few things that are like slightly better than others, but generally I'm like decent at everything, but not super good at any one thing.
But that's
and the flip side of that is having nothing you're particularly bad at, and there's no obvious weakness.
Yeah, apart from glute flexibility. A random one.
Can't imagine how often that comes up, but
more than you think, actually. Anytime you gotta like put your heel up by your face.
Yeah, high feet.
struggle with that.
There you go. You kept that one quiet from the route says.
If the ball's really steep, then I can like tilt my body backwards, so I don't have to actually use my glute flexibility. But if it's like a not so steep wall, then you need the flexibility to get it up.
That's interesting. Of all your flaws, I'd never picked up on that, Nate.
Yeah, now you can reveal these flaws because you're safe. and we've said quite a lot on the podcast, haven't we, Aidan, in that like if you're just getting into rock climbing, you can have some weaknesses now. It doesn't matter. Like, there's some things you won't get on with, and you never have to do them ever again. It's great.
Yeah. How many hours do you have to spend on coordination jumps these days? None.
Yeah. I've never been able to train like specifically for boulders. Like, I've done like the odd little bit, but I've never been like, so like now I'm training for a couple of boulders in Switzerland in February, and I can just go, okay, these are the two boulders I want to do the most. I'm going to train specifically for the moves on those boulders and like the length of them and everything. I've never been able to do that. It's always been train for comps and then just use the comp training to go and try and do things outside, which is quite exciting, actually. I'm pretty keen to get over that.
So it sounds like, judging by the way you've answered this question, it doesn't sound like you've got any regrets, but have you had any moments since you've called it off that you've thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have? Like, have you had any hesitation?
To be honest, no, I haven't had any of that. Maybe I might get a little bit once the selection event does come around.
But you'll be having a great time in Switzerland.
I will be in Switzerland, so but maybe like watching the World Cups, I might be a bit like, oh, I'll miss it a bit. But because I'm saying all this stuff about comps, training, everything not being great, but the comps were really fun. Like, a lot of it was great. I'm definitely glad that I did it all, because I've been to some really cool places and met loads of really cool people who are now like going to be like friends for life. And it was definitely worth doing.
I thought it'd be fun to ask you what your highlights were then, because when sportsmen retire from anything, then they do kind of a highlights reel, don't they? So I was wondering what were your favorite moments in the competing scene at any level, really?
Oh, hang on, my landlord's ringing me.
No, not the way.
He can wait. He can wait.
Get him on. Is he gone?
Don't think so. Oh, no, that wouldn't stop some people.
Aidan and I could get an episode out of that.
highlights, right. I guess There's definitely a couple that stand out, and they definitely come with the results, I guess. Like they, there's definitely some highlights which were not results based, but like my two best results, I would say, are when in my last year of the youth, I won one of the European Youth Cups. And it was after like a year of, I made every final that year. I can't remember where I came in the first one, but not on the podium. And then in the next one, I came third and then won the last one. So it was kind of like a progression which we built up. And winning that comp was a super good feeling, but the main thing was actually the team. Like the team psych was so good at that comp. Like they were so loud, cheering and everything. And yeah, it was just like, was like a proper family of the youth team and everything. It was really cool. That's definitely a memory that will stick with me forever. It was really good. And then into the seniors, when I made the World Champs finals in Innsbruck, which I think was 2018. That was really cool. And I have one little like memory screenshot taken. When I was like stood in the doorway, like before coming out onto the stage, like it's a massive stadium and all the lights are off. And I was just stood there in the doorway looking out, and everyone had their phone torches on, like holding them up in the air. Like, I guess the MC had gotten to do it, like waving them around. Mm. And that was super cool, like just to see that, be on stage and then go out and climb. That was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an amazing one, because World Champs, wasn't it? Yeah, and I remember it was an absolutely stacked field as well. It was an incredible final to make.
Yeah, it was really weird. And I think in that semi-final was probably possibly the best round I've had in any comp. Now, that's probably a weird one, because some people might know that I flashed all five boulders in a couple of rounds of definitely two World Cup qualifier rounds. Mm-hmm. And then another one I did five and six tries. But I still think that semi-final is my best performance in a round.
Mm. I guess if you flash all the boulders, you maybe don't necessarily have the opportunity to like show your best. Yeah. The boulders in that semi-final there were some pretty hard boulders, weren't there?
Yeah. I flashed the first one, which was a slab. And then the other three, like, it took me a few goes to do all three of them. So it definitely wasn't an easy thing for me. And it came down, the last boulder, I was basically like not really getting anywhere on it, like really struggling. And then I basically did, like, some people know me for crimping screw holes in comps. I did that, crimped the screw hole and just like skipped out like two moves to like lock into this really bad undercut really high up, and then like reel it in like a bicep curl in this undercut. And that was enough to get in. But basically I did that, finished the round, and I was super psyched. And I was like, oh, cool. I've done it. I'm in. I thought I was in straight away. And then I went to go speak to some people and was like, well, you might not be in just yet. Like, there's still a lot of people and you're like fourth or something at the minute. And there was like 10 more people to come. And then just like sat there. I went and sat on my own and just watched people, because I know it was a bit weird. And yeah, people just kept fucking up.
Yeah.
It's like I watched, I think it was Yoshiyuki and Adam Ondra, like just fuck up the slab, which I didn't think was that bad when I was climbing it. And then like a couple of Tomoa didn't do the third one, which I was just like, how has he not done that? Like, just like everything was just going the way for me to make it through. And then it came down to the last person, which was Yerny. And just every go on the last boulder, he just needed to top it to get in and knock me out. And then he just But no, every go was like, oh yeah, he's going to do it. And then he just kept falling off. And he get to one, I think the last go, he had one hand on the finish hold. And I was like, well, that's done. And he just fell off again. And then that was it. It was just, yeah, pretty roller coaster of emotions. It was pretty crazy.
I remember it really well because I was watching it in back in the good old days when you could watch comps without having to pay. I was watching it at Social in Leicester, and I think I remember it being the last couple of boulders. You needed Sean and Yerne to not do like a boulder each, basically, and thinking like, I really felt like they were one of them was going to do one and it was going to be the end. But I remember watching Yerne on that last boulder and like, yeah, everyone who we'd seen, like once they got through the crux, they did it. And then he got through the crux and we were all like, oh no. And then he just fell off out of nowhere. God, we all shouting. It was great.
That was a season where he won the overall as well. He was doing really well that season, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
he was like one of favourites to win, I remember.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
He's already won the overall.
I mean, he had an amazing season, hadn't he? But it is a funny idea that it's a moment in competition.
I don't know what you're going to say.
About like, I had a really similar thing in the youth comps as well, when I was like climbing against Baptiste, well, not against. Obviously, you are just climbing boulders, but Baptiste was my competitor and we were like really close in a comp. And I remember it was down to attempts and he'd qualified ahead of me, so without after me. And I remember watching him. I had a similar thing that you were saying. And every time I was like, oh, well, he's obviously going to do it. And then he kept falling off. And then I had realized that like, he needed to do it, that attempt to beat me. And then he fell off. And there was a moment where I was like, I mean, obviously, yay. You've made finals or you've won, but you're like celebrating at somebody else's loss.
I talked to a lot of people about this. And anyone that is a competitor and says that they have never wished someone else to fall off is lying.
Yeah,
100% they're lying. If someone does that boulder and they're going to beat you or knock you out of finals, you want them to fall off.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who it is. Benny's one of my best mates. He's lives with me. If he's going to knock me out of finals of the World Cup, fall off that boulder, please.
Well, it's a weird idea because if you... You basically...
I'll be really happy for him if he makes it, but I would have rather been in there myself.
It's the idea that, you know, the classic phrase, like, oh, I want everyone else to do their best, but I kind of want to do better on that day. But the like, competitors, or like, most of the competitors go with the, like, aspiration to win, even if they're not really expecting to win. Everyone wants to get their rank as high as possible. Everyone kind of wants to win at some point. And just nature of competition, that your rank depends entirely on how everyone else does. So like in some way or another, you want everyone else to do badly or as bad as possible to make you do well.
You have to. It's a funny statement because I have heard it a lot of that one of, you know, I want everyone to do as well as possible, but I want to win. But what's that even mean? Because you don't know if that was there's no way of telling if that was as good as someone could have possibly done. And in some ways, it's quite cocky, isn't it? Because it's like, I won, but that was as good as you could have done. I know that. I saw you fell off that boulder, but you could never have done that in a million years, mate. I could do it. Like, it's never going to happen, is it?
It's all very hypothetical.
I feel like that's always the more cocky way of putting it, but that's the way people say
it. Yeah, but where I was going with this, you mentioned how you've always climbed outside, like between competitions. Have you always, Nathan, felt like you've been able to compartmentalize that, like separate that quite obviously, like the competitive element which you can take to the rocks, obviously not wanting the person to fall off, but maybe kind of feeling competitive with people when on a trip.
I definitely don't have any competitiveness on rock now. I maybe would have when I was younger, for sure. Yeah, but I think that's just like being young, isn't it? You just generally
a bit more competitive
with your mates and stuff. You want to climb more hard boulders than them.
It's kind of like, it's quite friendly though, isn't it? That kind of thing. Like,
yeah, like you're not wishing more... to fall off outside. I don't think I've ever done that.
That
would just be dangerous.
Oh, please stack it off the top of this high wall.
You want them to do it, whatever they're trying, but you also want to do it. And you want to do it maybe, like, not now, but when I was younger, I would have maybe wanted to do stuff quicker than someone else, or or do more boulders or something. But like, I haven't felt like that in a long time. Now it's just like, I just do it for me, and just if I'm with people, I'll support them, and just
quite relaxing, not feeling competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
makes it so much easier to just like enjoy what you're doing.
The nice like added benefit on climbing trips is you're actually kind of incentivized to want your friends to finish what they're doing, because normally it means if they finish it, you can go home or go try something else or go have dinner.
You don't have to do that. Have a long walk in again.
Why? You didn't have to say that. It was feeling quite wholesome and like quite a lot of camaraderie in there. Now it's just transact. Oh yeah, do your boulder, mate. We can go home. I thought it was a wholesome part of the conversation there.
No, we definitely had that once or twice in Rockland. So I remember Nathan wanting to go do Oliphant's Dawn, and it was like one of the only days where we had planned to not go out, and being like, oh, okay, fine. But like when we got there, I was, you know, obviously I want Nathan to do it for Nathan, but I also want him to do it quickly so we can stop standing around in the cold.
I remember a similar thing when me and Nathan were pushing for early morning sessions where we'd leave in darkness and walk in as like dawn was as the sun was just about coming up, so you'd arrive at the boulder as the sun starts to come up, and yeah, it's quite cool. But I think there was a couple of times where we did early morning sessions and then rested in the middle of the day and then did night sessions, and it's only so much of that's actually fun if you're not keen to climb at the austere times of day.
We had that on the same boulder, didn't we, Nathan? Because like you felt that Oliphant's Dawn, partly in the name, the only time it would really get the best conditions is before the sun gets on it in the morning, because like where it sits. And Nathan a couple of times was like, oh, it'd be really good to like get a morning session on this. And both Dara and I, who weren't trying it, were like, nah.
I think it basically became obvious that he really didn't want to do that. And then I think I was like halfway through the trip and I basically just wrote it off. I was like, I'm not gonna make them do that. And then it was just that one day we'd like planned to rest because it was meant to rain. And then we woke up and it was just dry and overcast. It was just like, I've got to make the most of this. It's not going to rain till like midday. Like, please, guys. Please. And then I went and did it. So, yeah, I appreciate it.
Relief.
Maybe the pressure helped me try harder or something as well. Yeah. I've got this one chance.
Yes. So day before last day as well, wasn't it? It was right towards the end.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of pressure. Do you feel like you can climb better with some pressure?
I think in comps I always have. I think like when there's more pressure, I do tend to do better. Definitely thrive under it. Outside, I don't know. I'm not I've never really thought about that, but I mean, I guess I did that under some time pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely prefer to not have pressure. It's more fun.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever find yourself putting pressure on yourself?
I think I've basically become this really, I think I'm pretty chilled on that stuff. I probably would have in the past put some pressure, being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do it today. I feel good. I've made some links and stuff. But I think definitely other people would say this as well. That kind of stuff doesn't really like bother me that much. It doesn't get to me. I thought I could do something today, if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be like upset about it, or because I know I can just come back. Mm. Even if it's like the last day of the trip, just come back another time and do it.
Timeless nature of rock.
Yeah, it's always going to be there. And that's definitely something that I've like had to, it's definitely like I've learned that that is the truth over time. Especially when you're competing and climbing on rock, you're like, oh, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to come back to this place or whatever. So you're definitely put a bit more pressure on yourself. But I guess the last couple of years when I've been like kind of thinking about this transition, it's been more like, well, I can just come back. And even when I'm done with comps, like all these rocks are still going to be here. And it doesn't matter if I climb it now or in 10 years, it's still going to be there.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I would say that's very fair. I think you always seem to be very calm on climbing trips, which is actually very nice. I really like climbing with calm people on climbing trips. It makes things easy, doesn't it?
Yeah. As opposed to really angry, agitated people.
Well, it's just a different. Yeah, people go one way or the other, don't they? It's we spoke about it in Rocklands as well, of like the Americans that we sort of saw or climbed with would get so much, they were more emotional, like they would get so much more angry if they weren't doing something, but also celebrated so much more when they did do something. So like when the American group that you were at the crag with did something at the other end of the crag, you'd hear about it. You hear they're like, let's go. Like all of them, everyone's yelling. The guy who's done it's yelling. Like, you know, the guy comes down, he's done it. He's almost in tears with the emotion of the thing. And then he compared it to like the British group of like, you know, one of us would do something and it'd be like, nice. Good job, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just stop. I'm like, cool. That was cool.
Yeah. Sweet. I kind of don't necessarily think that's like a, I feel that's more, it's quite a British thing to not engage so much of your emotions, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's not that you feel it less. It's that you express it a bit less.
I don't know. I think I probably do feel it less.
You think?
Yeah, maybe if you put more emotion into it with the chance that it's going to upset you more if you don't do it, maybe you would appreciate doing it more. I don't know.
I think you would. I think like letting yourself get so invested in it, typically, obviously it's a sweeping statement because not all Americans are the same, but as typical of the Americans, like weens, when they don't do it, it's horrible. But if they do it, they do genuinely get a high that looked more than I've ever felt after doing a boulder.
That to be honest, sounds quite similar to comps, to be honest.
Mm.
Because like you put so much emotion into comps, and if it goes bad, it's shit.
Yeah.
But if you do well, it's amazing. It's better than any feeling that I've had on the rock. But there's far more feeling shit doing comps if it goes bad.
Yeah.
Whereas climbing outside, you can have a great day every single day. It just won't be that top of the ladder feeling that you get if you win a comp or something. But like, you're still going to have a great time every day.
It's sometimes an active effort to appreciate those days as well.
It's just like weighing up, like if you want that one-off feeling, which is incredible, but it comes with loads of bad days? Or do you want fun days every day or most days without the really bad days?
I think I would stick in the way I do it personally, because like when you see someone that angry after like falling off their project and they're throwing stuff around and they're throwing their cap around and screaming, I always think like, man, that looks rubbish. And not only that, is it, it's kind of embarrassing. Like you're making it hard on everybody who's come out with you, because then like all of the spotters are like stood around like, oh god, like, and no one knows where to look or what to say, and you're like, good go, buddy.
Yeah,
we'll get it next time, mate.
With being chill and not caring that much.
Yeah, I'd stick with it as well, but the high does look good.
yeah. Well, I feel like I've in competitions. You said something interesting there about like the intensity of the highs in competitions being higher than that of outdoor climbing. I think I'd agree with your point you made about the consistency of outdoor climbing. Generally, your days are always pretty good, even if you don't do the stuff you were maybe hoping to do, or like the things, stuff you want to try, maybe, better way of putting it. Whereas the lows in competitions can be quite crap. But I actually found, for me personally, the highs from competitions and rock climbing, I mean, obviously very different experiences, but I didn't necessarily feel like they were any less intense, maybe is a way of saying it.
Did you put more emotion into comps when you were competing to what you do rock now? Because if it's the same, then I guess you get the same out of it.
Yeah. I would say I'd say maybe I put more into rock climbing, because I think I'm more like intrinsically motivated by rock climbing. I'd say I'm, whatever your definition of passion is, I'd say I'm more passionate by my definition of rock climbing than I ever was of comps. So I feel like I'm almost more invested in it, but I'm not particularly emotional. But no, that was like a sweeping statement. I don't always engage so much. I don't always engage so much with my emotions within climbing context.
And is that just within a climbing context?
What are you referring to? No, as in like, yeah, I rationalize things quite a lot. I'm probably not the most emotional person in the world, but
can you tell your mum that?
Yeah, but you can do that without engaging with your emotions.
Just drifting into the role of budget therapist there for a moment.
Yeah, swiftly moving on. Right, here's another question. Competitions are a set date. You have like your season prescribed ahead of you. It gives so much structure to your year and your training. Like you mentioned earlier about, you made that decision because it was at this point in like December where you had to essentially plan your following year quite precisely to like down to like the training that you do in preparation for it. Now, obviously, no competitions. Your plan is entirely self-prescribed, I guess. The lack of structure, does it feel like, or lack of definite structure, does it feel daunting? Is it quite nice to be like, I mean, you've been in comp game for a long time, so I can imagine it's quite relaxing as well. But
yeah, feels quite free, to be honest. Yeah.
In a nice way.
Yeah, definitely. And just decide where I want to go, when I want to go, and then train for it and go.
Yeah. Mm. And do you find yourself, I mean, maybe it's an assumption, but I'd assume by the level of what you've achieved in competitions, I'd kind of just make the assumption that you're quite ambitious. I'd make the assumption that anyone who's making World Championships finals would have to be quite ambitious. The metric in which you are ambitious in competitions is quite easy because there's like an obvious structure in which to navigate your way through. You essentially try and increase your rank during the competitions, whereas now outdoor climbing obviously doesn't really have that at all. I mean, you could say grades are that or whatever. But do you find that your goals are like very much like self-prescribed, and have you thought much about that?
I mean, your episode with Francis was quite interesting. So I think my mindset to rock climbing is very similar to Francis's. I don't like setting goals like, I want to try these boulders and I'd like to do them at some point. It doesn't matter when I do them, I'm going to train for them and I'll do them at some point.
Yeah.
That's basically how I will be going about stuff, I think. In the past when I've been on rock trips, I like do some of the things that I went out to go and do. And then once I've done them, I'll just go and try everything. Basically, like loads of really hard boulders and stuff, and just be like, okay, I did some moves on that. That's really cool. Go to someone else, try that. Just like have one session on everything, basically, and then just be like, okay, this is cool. I really like that boulder. I'll train for that and come back and try that a bit more. Just like kind of testing everything out and just seeing what I like. I want to climb, like what's going to challenge me and what's. Is it what I enjoy climbing stuff as well?
But is this a moment now where you could maybe look to up that difficulty? Because in Rocklands, I don't think you tried much you didn't do. And of the things the only thing I can think of was book club you tried and didn't do, but you only gave it two sessions and you fell off almost the last move.
Yeah.
Like you weren't really putting many sessions into things. Like, and you did a lot of stuff quickly. Are you now thinking perhaps this could open up the door to try something, you know, that would maybe take you 10 sessions plus?
Yeah, for sure. Like I want to push myself and try harder things. I have been already. I've been trying stuff for much more than 10 sessions already. I just haven't done them yet. Yeah, I've been trying a project in Switzerland for, I'd lost count of how many days on it, but somewhere between 10 and 20, I don't know, probably maybe 15 to 20 sessions on it. And I know I can do it. I'll just be like, I'll do it at some point. And that's one of the things I want to train for this trip that I'm going to put some more time into. I'm trying things that are harder than what I've done in the past. Yeah, I mean, that will inevitably, if I do them, I'll bump my grade up and stuff. If that's what you're after.
is this the fake pamplemousse set?
Yeah. I've tried it a lot and I've done it in three sections, so.
No, it's all hard then.
Yeah, it is hard. Definitely would be the hardest thing that I will have done if I do it.
But this, I like this approach you were talking about whatever the difficulty of something, having a session on everything, then training or then trying or training for what inspires you, I guess. It's like a nice way in which you know why you're inspired by a boulder, I guess. You're inspired by it for like what it, the actual like climb itself. And
yeah, like I've definitely watched videos of climbs and been like, that looks amazing. And then like wanted to go and do it. And then I've gone to it and tried it and been like, I don't like this boulder. It's not fun to climb. Whereas if you just go try everything, like you can just find things that you want to do and then focus on them.
It's so complex. Like obviously it's so subjective as well about like what inspires one, like each climber, about like what climb inspires a climber is like so unpredictable, I find. Like there's so many things that I can be like, wow, I really want to try that. And then I try it and I'll be like, eh. Mm. And not really, yeah. It's a weird idea of, I always think it's strange to be like, wow, yeah, I really want to do that climb, having never tried it. I mean, I definitely have done that myself a lot of times, but it's kind of hard to know, right?
Yeah, you can't know if you're going to like it until you try it.
Mm.
Mm.
And what was the other thing? There was two things you mentioned.
Well, yeah, there's three, but so my main focus for this trip are going to be that and Fight Club, which had one session on in November on like the last day of the trip, and I did all the moves. It's like a long fingery boulder. But I'm pretty confident I can do that. If I don't, it's not going anywhere. But also La Rustica, which is not that far away from it. I've been trying quite a lot. There's basically one move which is really, really hard, which is like by far the crux of the boulder. And I very nearly did it. I like swung out and swung in and then fell on the inswing. And basically you do that after that move. There's a couple of transition moves into that move, but then after that move, it's like AA plus after that, which I can do pretty consistently. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to just basically, I've decided I'm going to go there. When I'm in Bavona, I'm going to go there, have like 10 goes a day at that move until I get it relatively consistent. And it's very different style to Fight Club, which is not very far away. So I can basically go there, have 10 goes, and then go to Fight Club. And then go next day, go there, 10 goes, go to Fight Club.
Yeah. That actually looks quite good because it looks like you don't really close your fingers on La Rustica for that one move anyway. You're like on like an open pinch, aren't you?
Yeah, it's completely anti-style to Fight Club. So yeah, I couldn't get tired or anything.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah. Nice. And that's where you're planning on going back in February?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think last time I went, I basically had a pretty long list of a lot of hard boulders and barely got to try any of them. I was just like, I had way too many things I wanted to try. So yeah, this time I'm just slimming it down to a couple of things.
Yeah. It's hard to do that. I remember when I went out to Switzerland, to Ticino the first time in spring, I had like a massive list of things I wanted to try. And basically tried none of them.
I just wanted to ask a couple of more questions about the competing angle. What was the hardest part of the competition? So what were the worst moments in competing?
I do struggle a lot with motivation to train. Sometimes I go back and forth between being really psyched to train and having no psych at all, quite regularly. And yeah, those bits when I'm like, don't have that psych is really difficult, to actually stay psyched for it. I haven't been just a rock climber for long enough to know if that's going to still be the case. But yeah, I guess within comps, though, I have to think. I guess it's when you just like, when you feel like you've been climbing well in training and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm feeling really good. And then you go to a comp and just don't perform to your own expectations. I guess they're the best feelings. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And kind of related to this, do you feel like now, finishing your comp career, do you have any regrets?
What about things I would have done differently? Or...
Yeah, yeah. Anything you would have done differently? Anything you maybe did but shouldn't have?
To be honest, I think now to be a really good comp climber, you have to not rock climb. I think you could do like the odd day here and there, but you can't be a rock climber and a comp climber and be the best. I don't, in my opinion. And that was a, that was just never an option for me. Like I wanted, I enjoyed both 50-50 during that time. And yeah, I was never going to be able to give up rock climbing as well. There's comp climbers who are my friends, and I'm always like, oh, I'd want to come on a rock trip. And they're just like, no, I'm focused on comps. And they're the people that do really well or have done really well.
Yeah, anecdotally, that adds up, doesn't it? Like, looking at the, maybe it's only Ondra really that has managed to do well in both. But even then, like, consistency in Boulder World Cups, he's never really quite cracked.
Yeah, like you get comp climbers that go out and have a week away or something and just tick off a load of really hard stuff. But they're not, I wouldn't say they are rock climbers. They're comp climbers that do the odd bit of rock climbing. I think back, like when I started, maybe on and before when I was competing, you could do both for sure. The style was much more basic, and rock climbing kind of mirrored what comp climbing was as well. At that point, but nowadays, but like Max, for example, when we were in Salt Lake this year, we stayed together for a week after Korea, and I was really psyched to go climbing outside. I went climbing outside a couple of days between the comps, and I could not convince Max to come out at all. He's like, no, I'm focused on the comps, and obviously it's working for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the younger generation of comp climbers seem to be choosing to focus on the comps even more so. And perhaps they can see that, you know, as you were saying, it's just the divergence between rock climbing and comp climbing is getting bigger and bigger. And so it's just sensible. If you want to be a comp climber, it's sensible to focus on it, knowing as well that once you retire from comp climbing, you can then do the rocks. You know, if you're a comp climber until you're 30, you've then got a long time of rock climbing.
Yeah.
Still potentially. So you could have a full career doing both, really.
Yeah.
Saying that, I climbed a couple of times on the Vecchio face with Mejdi when I was out in Switzerland. He was out on a rock trip. I always quite like seeing it when really, really successful comp climbers are just climbing outside. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's good to see, isn't it?
It's nice to see, like, yeah, there. Yeah, I don't know why I enjoy it so much, but it's always always nice to see. I remember, actually, that was one thing. Yannick was climbing. He missed the first part of the World Cup season. Yannick Flo. Because he injured his ankle. And he was climbing outside pre-season. And he's kind of like one of the only people I can kind of really think that did that. But then again, I think the style last year seemingly changed quite a bit, or it seemed much more like powerful, burly, with maybe transferred, like the skill set between rock and comps was, it maybe converged again a little.
Definitely a little bit this year.
And how many trips do you reckon you'll be able to squeeze in next year then, if you've got the whole year comp free?
I am planning on doing like 3. Because I am controversially not that psyched on climbing in the UK. I definitely like to have a trip planned in the future and train for that trip, and then do all my rock climbing in the trip, and then come back and train for another trip. That's how I like to do it. I do the odd day outside in the UK, but I'm most psyched for climbing on trips. Yeah, I just feel like I can be more psyched because I'm like, I've put the time in to train for it. Yeah, and I just feel like I get more out of it.
I actually think I have that, a really similar thing. But I think, I don't know if you had this when you go on trips or when you're in competition, how like your training mode or like mindset differs from when you're in like a training phase to that of a performance phase. Do you like notice a real difference? Just in like how you approach, essentially what made me think of that is I really like climbing in the UK, but when I'm training, I am actually not that interested in climbing outside. Like in like a training block. I'd more have like almost like a block of time within the UK where I'm like, I'm an outdoor climber now. I'm not trip. Like this is like a performance phase, but in the UK. And then I really like it. But yeah, when I'm actually like in a training block.
Yeah. Maybe if I sat like a month aside to climb in the UK, I would be really psyched on it. Yeah, but basically I haven't climbed outside since my decision to be an outdoor climber.
Yeah. So you're training.
Okay,
so you're kind of training at the moment, right? And I mean, it's only been like what, a couple of weeks, a week and a half maybe. Does your training differ quite drastically from that of what you would be doing?
What my comp training would look like.
Is it like
massively? Yeah, it's very different.
Massively.
Much more like specific to the boulders I want to try. A lot more finger stuff, and less climbing on blobs. And obviously like the time on comp boulders is not there. I don't have to do that anymore, and I can just it's like, so the fake pamplemousse sit project has quite a lot of like leggy moves. Like, it's really tensiony, and there's some like leg compression, a one-legged drop knee, which is really weird. So I'm doing quite a lot of leg work to improve in that area as well for that boulder.
What about volume? Is it less volume?
No, pretty similar amount that I'm doing, yeah. It's just very different what I'm doing.
And do you plan to keep working with a coach?
Yeah.
To Dave? Yeah,
with Dave. I've been with Dave for ages now. He's actually really good for communicating. Like, I can just send him a message whenever, and I'll guaranteed get a reply within like 10 minutes or something. Unless it's like after 9 p.m. and he's in bed.
But you can probably message him at 5 a.m. and he'd reply. If not 4.
Alas, he is a dad.
Well, I think actually that was a pre-existing condition.
He was an early son.
Yeah, he loves getting up really early.
That was pretty, maybe probably made the dad transition a little easier, I suspect.
Yeah.
How are you, Sam? Are you an early rise?
No, I'm not. No.
More be soon, though.
Yeah. I'm gonna dabble in it shortly.
If you're looking for quiet time.
Yeah, it's a lovely, probably, quiet, peaceful time.
And you can probably wave goodbye to that for a little while.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I really love quiet and peaceful moments, and I'm probably going to lose those as well. So.
I always find myself just wasting time in that period. I'm like, I really should just go to bed. I'm not doing anything useful. But then I'll just stay up for 2 hours doing nothing.
Exactly, but that's the moment.
For no reason.
Like, your mind goes wild at those hours, like, and suddenly you're just interested in things. Like, I always find myself googling ridiculous things really late at night. I'll be googling like, what is the rarest fish in the world, and
What is a rare inspiration knot?
Unfortunately, I've forgotten the name, but I did Google this, and it's a little fish that lives in a single, like, underwater cave in America, and it only lives in one cave, and they're worried that if it floods, then that fish will be wiped out of existence.
There's the fish. The cave floods. Is it already full of water?
That's a good point, but I think what they mean is when it flooded, it would fill with like silt and crap, and then that would probably kill it because they wouldn't have access to the whatever. And maybe they're also probably worrying about it drying out. That's normally what people worry about with fish, isn't it? but like little things at night are just much more interesting than they are during the day, and I don't know why, but I'm always, it's a good time.
Yeah, what the heck went through your mind? I think what's the rarest fish in the world?
But if I had that thought in the middle of the day, I'd just carry on living my life. But at that point at night, I've got
no
to
distractions.
Know. I can't go to sleep without knowing the answer to the question. And so I end up with loads of these like little random facts that no one else thinks are very interesting.
No, I like it. I like it. It's nice to be surrounded by, just dropped in amidst a board session. I like the land mammals fact.
Yes, the land mammals fact. Yeah.
Yeah, this was, I don't know if you know this fact, Nathan. Actually, Sam, you'll do a better job of it. You'll remember it better.
All right. Okay. So I haven't done my due diligence on this fact before I get loads of messages. I've had quite a few messages about your EV rant, Aidan.
Oh yeah,
some people not so keen about that, but anyway,
I wasn't criticizing anyone who has electric vehicles, that's what you say, because it's definitely better than
yeah, I think I've been clarifying all week that what you meant was that a government might get more out of subsidizing something else than electric cars, but if you can afford an electric car, get one, it's great.
That was my point. But the effectiveness of policy as opposed to criticizing the people who get electric cars, because obviously that is a massive investment and so much respect for people who are willing to do that, because that is amazing. The point that I was making was that for people who are responsible for policy, like being smart about the investments you make in the context of that conversation, I was talking about electric vehicles, could be better allocated elsewhere.
Yes.
But just going to wrap that up.
Yeah, just we'll make it absolutely clear. We are pro electric vehicles.
Yeah, amazing. They're really cool. And if you have one, hats off.
I learned this fact from Radio 4 and I have not done my due diligence, but it was, what percentage of land mammals, you can follow along with this at home, are humans, the pets of humans, or livestock of humans?
Do you want me to guess?
You must guess, I'm afraid. Okay. Yes. Perhaps
and there's also a pause for people to try and have their own guesses when.
Yeah, yeah. Think about it in your head.
What, so humans, pets of humans, and livestock.
Yes. So
land mammals.
Yes.
I reckon 50%.
So according to Radio 4, it was 96%.
What?
Which is humans and livestock.
Astronomically high. But I feel like rats, just rats alone, should number more than that 4%. But
I think this, I think I just did a little search. I think this refers to wild mammal biomass. So I think we're talking about mass.
Oh, it's mass.
That would... Surely there's loads of birds.
Well, they're not mammals.
Oh, true. They walk around. Sometimes pigeons.
Yeah. Here we go. Little search. Wild animals make up for 4%, humans 34%, and livestock 62%.
Wow.
I guess livestock takes a lot of mass.
Yeah. Cows are big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. And that's the kind of divergent stuff we like to go down now.
Oh, I love the tangents.
We do a lot of tangents.
Do you have a gaming chair? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so comfy.
Mm. Yeah, you need one of them, don't you? Didn't you turn the heating off in your house trying to create a game?
I tried to get a chair up into my room and it switched the heating off for a week.
Billy was saying, and now you're no longer a professional comp climber, that you might move into being a professional Call of Duty gamer.
Oh yeah, I'm going to be a streamer.
Oh, please do.
Absolutely not.
Wait, you can have a Discord channel. We've got one of them.
We've got a Discord channel. Yeah, look at you, Aiden.
I call myself.
There you go. Yeah,
my name is Big Roll in the my gaming name. Fig roll.
Well, there you go. So now, if you find yourself getting killed by Fig Roll in Call of Duty, you've just been iced by superstar climber Nathan Phillips.
Fig Roll. Where did that come from?
Fig Roll 159, and I can't do 159.
Oh yeah.
famously, you say you can't do 147.
Yeah, I can't. I can train and do it if I train to be able to do it, but I can't do it at the minute.
So training for you doesn't involve campus boarding, presumably?
Not at the minute, no.
No.
And if Jay tells me to do it, I'll do it. But
do you do much fingerboarding?
Yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah?
I'm actually doing a lot of like edge lift stuff now that I'm rock climbing.
This is all the vogue now, isn't it? The heavy lifting with a portable fingerboard, attaching it to some weights and then lifting the weights off the floor. So it's kind of turning it around and doing it the other way.
I mean, I'm only 1 week into it so far, so can't tell you if it works yet.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I don't know why that's... Maybe it's variety that's making it all the craze. There is that claim of... Actually, no, I'm not going to talk about that. I haven't researched it, really. There's an idea of passive tension, isn't there?
I love the idea that on this podcast, you don't want to talk about something you haven't researched. Like the amount of stuff we've started talking about that we don't have a clue about.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I just don't want to dig myself any more rabbit holes.
Yeah, take a guess.
No, there's an idea of like passive tension, which can like essentially like by like hanging on a fingerboard with everything quite essentially the idea being like, oh no, nah, just moving on. I read something about it ages ago. Somebody wrote an article about it and it was a really long time ago, and I don't really remember that much, to be honest. But basically making the claim that there was benefit to picking up an edge but generally the force you can produce by hanging on an edge is a lot higher than that which you can pick up.
Is it? Because I would have thought it would take your like shoulder stability out of it. So it would become just purely finger strength.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. Weirdly, I don't know what Dave's numbers were, but we did a test for like how much weight we could pick up. So we did four fingers, and then it was the high angle stuff, four fingers, and then front three and back three. And Dave had a higher weight on me with four fingers, but I had a higher weight than him on front three and back three.
Ah, you see, I think that transfers really well to outdoor climbing, though, right? You've got more strength, slightly more unconventional finger positions. You know, when you train on an edge and it's like perfectly ergonomic and flat, the amount of times that you hold a hold like that outdoors is quite rare. I think if you've got like strength with like split fingers, it transfers quite well to climbing outside in like those less ergonomic shaped holds.
Mm. Yeah, it's just weird that he had a higher weight on the floor as well.
And you said you're doing this in high angles, so you're even bending your little finger. Like,
no, like so the yeah, the little finger is crimped. It's not like a, you know, how to describe it. What is that? That's a half crimp, right?
Yeah,
when
yeah.
When your
front three are crimped and your pinky is dragged.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the pinky is crimped as well. That's why we were doing it.
Ah, oh, okay. I like absolutely can't crimp with my pinky finger. It just doesn't work.
For clarity of listeners, we're talking about having a pinky crimped being like acutely flexed at PIP, which is like the middle joint.
Yeah.
Yes. So your DIP can still be straight.
Yeah.
The distal joint.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Indeed. Well, because usually when you're in a half crimp, your DIP is flexed, but your PIP is straight. So like your end knuckle of your finger is in the flexion, but your PIP, your middle joint, is straight when you're in a half crimp for your pinky, generally. But we're talking about high angle when your pinky, all your other fingers at the PIP joint become acutely flexed. And sometimes even when you crimp the MCP, like the one in your knuckle, flexes as well. So I think that's, I actually don't do that much on a fingerboard, but I find when I crimp, that happens quite a bit. But DIP is usually straight.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't do that. Like my little fingers are weird; they don't really bend very well.
Yeah, I think it does depend on the length of your fingers as well. Maybe you're comfortable doing it.
Yeah,
I remember back in our Rocklands trip, Nathan, which I now think I've changed up the order of this. I think we categorized how cool certain grip positions were, and I think at the time we fully agreed that half crimp is the coolest, followed by a full crimp.
Wait, wasn't pinch the coolest?
Maybe it was.
Pinch where your fingers are in a half crimp.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't remember. Some adds complication. I just really remember we both agreed that a three finger drag was remarkably uncool.
Yeah.
three finger drag is uncool. Yeah, true. That's a good point. And actually, it's a really valid and interesting debate to have as to which is the coolest and least cool grip type.
I actually now think, from personal taste, that
the high angle crimp is the coolest.
but not with your thumb wrapped over. I think it's cool when you have like a high angle crimp position and maybe your thumb is engaged on some part of the rock.
And it's funny how leading on to this, it leads on perfectly to the conversations we've had a few times of trying to make a cool wall of climbers. It is hard to find any climbers that are cool. And it's funny how these two conversations seem to link so easily together.
It's hard to find any cool climbers.
There are very few cool climbers.
That would be cool in a non-climbing.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple. Yeah.
I'd say the climbers who are cool in a non-climbing setting aren't really that cool in climbing. Because climbing's just a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gotta be a bit of a weirdo to be cool in climbing.
It's a sport that's just full of like dweebs and nerds, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's so few cool climbers. I remember we were racking our brains trying to come up with some cool ones.
I'll tell you that time. It was in Sheffield, actually, about a year ago. I had a gym session with Sam Pratt, who we've had on the podcast, and went to a pure gym. Think about like the stereotypical lads that might go to a pure gym.
Yeah.
Head to toe, tracksuits, those kind of things. And I kind of haven't really been in one before, but you go in like a little revolving pod to get in it and you've got to put like a code in or something. There's no human interaction to get in and out there at all. Anyway, I think I used my sister's code or something to get in there. Anyway,
arrest him.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get caught out. Call that. But I was in absolute classic form, was wearing hemp trousers and like a knitted jumper.
I've been to the gym in some like baggy climbing trousers as well.
And anyway,
it was Christmas at Tara's parents, and with you went to, and I was just wearing some climbing stuff.
Yeah, these are just my normal clothes. I'm knock about in these. I'm going to the gym. I don't need to be wearing smart clothes. Just like knocking them out clothes. Anyway, walk through this turnstile. Bunch of these tracksuit lads walk past, and they're like, they just looked me up and down and went, fucking nerd.
They actually said that.
What? Yeah. What? Yeah. I was like, oh God. And I had a great session. I was feeling so good that day.
Those tracksuit lads don't care that you've done Alpha, Aiden. They don't.
Not one bit.
You should pin them down. You should explain to them why they should give you some respect.
But there we go. I was like, wow, maybe I've got some vague bit of street cred in the climbing world. But just goes to, it's a nice bit of perspective, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
if you're feeling too like high and mighty, like, hey, yeah, I've climbed some hard boulders. I've pulled on some small crimps. Actually, you're a fucking nerd.
Yeah, that's good. For all of you guys at home, Aiden gets bullied by normal people just as much as the rest of us.
It's a good story. But
I always feel so self-conscious whenever you have a like a portable fingerboard and you're trying to do some fingerboarding around people that have no idea what you're doing. That's all.
Yeah, when I was first at uni, I had access to the uni gym, and I wasn't allowed to put a fingerboard up in my halls. And so, yeah, every fingerboard session I had was hung up on like a squat rack, like a gym just full of students. I got a lot of funny looks.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No shame.
Always makes you feel so daft, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've accepted the weirdness of this sport. I love it.
It is great.
Yeah, that might be all my questions.
Yeah, we got a decent amount in there before we went off on a tangent. Do you think at any point you might be interested in doing, like, would you ever like to be involved from a more like coaching side of things?
Like coaching the team
to go as a to still go as like a coach or work with
I don't think I want to go to comps as a coach. I think doing like route setting and stuff, I'm pretty psyched on that. I'm quite keen to do more like training, like setting for team trainings and comps and things. Stuff like that, which I think would be a more interesting way for me to give back a bit, I guess.
Have you done much competition route setting? Because I feel like in the UK you've basically always been competing.
I've set like youth cups quite a few times.
Yeah actually I do remember
some of that. And then like some local comps and stuff. But yeah, obviously I've been competing in BBCs for ages, so I haven't been able to do any setting for that. So.
And do you think you won't compete in BBCs from now on?
No, I think I will, if I'm here.
Yeah. It's a nice social life.
So. I do still enjoy competing, I guess. And I just don't want to do World Cups. I just want to do comps for fun. And not have to train for them.
But yeah, exactly.
Odd comp, yeah.
I found I did a comp earlier this year. Can't remember what month it was. Maybe May or June or something. At Rockover. And it was actually so fun. It was like I hadn't seen. Oh, yeah, you were there.
The Rockfest one where it was like the hardest qualifiers I've ever seen.
It was so much fun. That it was just like really hard boulders, open format kind of thing, wasn't it?
There's like 80 boulders. Like the hardest one was like an 8C boulder.
And like nobody even tried.
Stupid. No one's doing this today.
Yeah. But that was, and I remember going into that comp and it was like so relaxing because before then, like my last comp had been like a World Cup and I'd been competing with like comp mindset, but actually just going back and being like, I'm going to just enjoy a load of
funky boulders and have a catch up with people I haven't seen in a long time. And
yeah, it was a fun comp.
It's actually just, yeah, really, really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I probably enjoy it more than when I was a comp climber. But I think that speaks more to
when I was. That's the most wrecked I've ever been in final. Yeah. 80 boulders in qualification and finals the same day.
Yeah, I
had nothing to give in the final. It was like the worst performance I've ever given. So wrecked.
And Nath, what happened to your van on the way back from Switzerland?
Oh God. Yeah.
The palaver.
Well, it took me 9 days to get back from Switzerland
to the UK. So what happened?
My van was fine for the whole trip. Even like on the last day, like drove up some proper steep windy roads and it was no problem at all. And then just on the way back, I was in France, like not far after the French border, French-Swiss border. And I think we got stuck in some traffic for a bit. And then I needed to get fuel. So I came off the motorway and was just like, van sounds a bit weird. It was like, it sounded like a helicopter, but like quiet. and then it just like got worse. I filled up and then drove a bit further. I was like, it's just getting louder on that. And it was like really loud, like it sounded like a proper helicopter. And then I just stopped and slept because we were all going to sleep at that point anyway for the night. And then got up in the morning and it was like still super loud. And then drove it a bit more down the motorway. And it just started like screeching, like really high pitched screech, and like would lose acceleration at that point. And then a couple of times it like wouldn't go into fifth gear, or it got stuck in fifth gear and I couldn't get it out, which was quite scary on the motorway. And then I managed to get it to a garage, and I thought it was the clutch, got there and they went, it's the clutch. So I was like, okay, cool. And then they replaced the clutch over a week. It was like, we got there on Friday. And obviously they were closed over the weekend, so they had to order the part and then fix it on the Monday. So we just stayed somewhere nearby while they did that. And then they replaced the clutch. And then I tried to drive and it was exactly the same.
Oh, oh my God. So
I drove like 10 minutes further down the motorway and then was like, this is just getting worse. And then rang the breakdown cover, which I didn't think I'd actually taken out breakdown cover, but it turns out I did, luckily. I was like, how much is this going to cost me? And he was like, you're covered. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then basically they proceeded to put us up in some hotels, like 2-star hotels for a week before getting us home. And the van is still in France.
The van's still there now?
Still there, yeah.
And they never figured out they didn't know what was wrong with it.
3-4 weeks now, maybe. No, basically, I told them not to do anything to it and just bring it back to the UK. So they're repatriating it now. I should have it back the first week of January. And then I can take it to a garage that I know and they can diagnose it and fix it. Yeah.
Oh, God. But thankfully, because you're covered, this hasn't been a ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, it would have been bad otherwise. But I did have like a week or two I had to get public transport.
God.
It was a week when it was freezing.
Sam, public transport's like, great.
Public transport in this country is not great, actually.
Yeah, it actually sucks. But the concept.
Awful. Yeah,
the concept is great.
Conceptually, yeah. At the idea stage, it was great.
Yeah, it's all just been privatized, hasn't it? It's just been.
It's just hopeless, though, now. It's so expensive and so. Yeah. So many delays and cancellations. It's almost unusable.
Yeah.
Especially
but I do support the strikes, just, you know. I do support the strikes. Just a little caveat.
I support your right to strike. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man. I can't remember where we flew back from. Maybe, this is a Munich Euro Champs. There was a rail strike on the day I landed back to Manchester. So no trains. I had to get an €80 Uber back to Sheffield. £80, sorry, not euros. And yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I literally exhausted every other option, and that was the only one.
Yeah. Car share where you can.
Seems we've now been on a tangent that's so off topic, we might be cutting out a huge swathe of this interview. We're going to end up with like a 15 minute chat with Nathan.
Dispersed with walking mammals and
but
do you have any more questions for Nathan?
No. I think that's all my.
Yeah, I think we got some good stuff in there. Cheers for giving up your time, Nate.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Nate. Cheers, Nate. Merry Christmas.
Cheers, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Bye. Bye.